Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Ooh, I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
Hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. At last, again, we are back from a long little spring break here at Heritage. I'm just back, actually, from a little vacay outside of the country. And I was just in Norway for a week, which was lovely. And, I was just saying to, David, our engineer here, it seems like so much in the world has changed in just like a week.
But not really.
Yeah. Well, a lot has changed. I mean, in the last, since we've been on air here, about a month, 4 weeks or so. And it seems like every time you look away for a second, like 800 things happened in the news.
It's exhausting.
It's really crazy. And not just the news of politics, too, but also the news of media that's always changing. I mean, hey, you look away for a second and Lucky Peach magazine has folded. Ooh, that's really sad. Really sad. But you know what? One thing that has seemed to be constant in the world of food and media and recipes and cookbooks is one ingredient which the author today is calling the most important ingredient in the world, or the most important food. And can anyone guess what that is? I'll have my author contributor.
Oh, did you mean me?
Sure. What do you think it is, David? The most important food. It's not pizza.
Is it some kind of?
Put
it
on
some kind
pizza.
Of grain staying in the Bob's Red Mill?
No,
mentality.
It's not. Most important food. It's not cheese. It's eggs. Come on. Well done. Good guessing. Good sound effects. So we're talking about eggs today because my guest today has written a book called All About Eggs. It's the Lucky Peach All About Eggs book. It's written by the editors of Lucky Peach, including Rachel Kong, who's on the air right now. Rachel, how are you?
Hi. Hello. I'm good, Kathy. Did you have eggs in Norway?
I did have eggs, and I want to talk about... They seem to like the very dark orange pigmentation there. And I was reading Harold McGee's little section in your book where he talks about different regions and different countries in Europe have different preferences about color. And I just noticed that they're very dark orange over there. So it was delicious, though. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's funny because usually it's like Scandinavia likes a paler yolk. Like when I was in Iceland a couple years ago, I saw, pale yolks, maybe just... Because that's the way it was.
I was surprised when I read that. Maybe there's other countries that prefer dark, or maybe they changed their mind. Maybe so much has changed in the last few months that people just now prefer darker.
I mean, globalization. Yeah. I feel like Instagram has maybe...
They can do that. They can change their mind.
Yeah, like made everybody covet a darker yolk. Mm-hmm. The world is changing, like you said.
Yeah, but you know what? Eggs are universal, and you really prove that in this book. Eggs are timeless, too. And, hey, they're not limited to just breakfast, although why do we have that notion in this country? And it seems to be only this country, or mostly this country's fault for putting them in that corner.
It's a very Western idea to start with eggs for breakfast, and I don't, we try to tackle that subject in the book. I should say that the book is not just authored by me. It's a big kind of compendium. There are a lot of different cookbook authors and contributors, and recipes are sourced from everywhere because it's such a huge subject, and I wanted to, really get as many experts as possible. Yeah, I tried to hold back on the puns, but sometimes I just couldn't help help it. I really love a pun.
Yeah, well, it's all over the place. And thank you very much for including me as one of those contributors. It was delightful.
Yeah.
Very honored to contribute a couple of recipes there from Taiwanese egg dishes.
Do you want to talk about what your contributions are?
I believe there's the Taiwanese tea leaf eggs, the crackled, yes, marbled, sort of stained with the broth, hard-boiled eggs. And then there's also the oyster omelet, just the quintessential Taiwanese oyster omelet. I love, though, in this book, you really show how there are so many parallels in other countries and other cultures for very similar things. So you have side-by-side here a shakshuka recipe with a Mexican egg recipe that is almost like the same thing but with different spices. And then, you know, Taiwanese oyster omelet is very similar to the Hangtown fry, which is an oyster mm-hmm. omelet in Western tradition. So,
yeah, they're similar, but they're different. I think I just wanted to, talk about the ways in which we use eggs all over the world and the ways in which, even though our cultures are so different, they might have a lot more similarities than you think mm-hmm. in the way that we cook and we eat eggs.
So do you think, Rachel, that there's hope for like more world peace through this bridge, which is this universal bridge of egg appreciation?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so.
This book was really an attempt to try to bridge our cultural divides via egg.
One egg at a time. We can get there.
Yeah, it also really celebrates, you know, the differences. So I wanted to highlight both the similarities and the differences.
Uh-oh.
You know, like you were mentioning the oyster omelet that you have from Taiwan is kind of like the Hangtown fry, but not at all really, right? Because mm-hmm. you in the Taiwanese version, there's this crazy gloopy sauce that's so good.
It's drenched in it.
And, you know, we have a lot to learn from one another, and there's a lot that can be stolen, I think.
Ooh.
For good.
Another thing that's different is that the Taiwanese oyster omelet is not eaten for breakfast. I mean, you could, but it's sort of like a snack or whenever.
It'd be an intense breakfast, I think. Just like super goopy.
I think that sounds okay to me for breakfast.
Yeah, that does. Yeah, actually.
Yeah. So, okay, this book is also one of the last Lucky Peach cookbooks, which is super mm-hmm. sad, because I know that mm-hmm. there's this series, and you worked on also the sausage book. There was the Chinese cookbook, 101 Chinese recipe.
Easy Asian recipes.
Oops. Yeah. Sorry. 101 Easy Asian recipes from Lucky Peach. And what else? So there's All About Eggs, and is that the end of the line?
All About Eggs. Last year was the worst of Lucky Peach, and you had Chris and mm-hmm. me on your show, and Peter Meehan had the cookbooks, which were 101 Easy Asian and Power Vegetables came out in the fall, which is all about like vegetable cookery.
That's a great book. So is this the last?
Yeah.
All About Eggs?
Yeah. So this is the last one, you know. Like I say in the book, you know, eggs will outlive us all.
But I think a little eulogy is in order here, because you've been, I mean, we know, a lot of folks know who David Chang is, who co-founded this magazine, Lucky Peach, with Peter Meehan, veteran food writer. Chris Ying worked on it for many years as the editor-in-chief. You've been there as an editor since 2011, so you are very, you know, responsible for a lot of the greatness that it, you know, and the great coverage that it did over the years. And that it's not just the coverage, though. It's that style that Lucky Peach has and that global awareness that is so unique. And it's going to be missed very much.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it was such a small staff. I joined on with issue 2, and we were always just trying to figure out how to do it. We had all never made a magazine before.
That's cool.
Definitely never, you know, didn't really know what we were doing in those first few years, and maybe the whole time we were always kind of flying by the seat of our pants. Mm-hmm. But I think that made it something special and something different. And yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of all the work that I did there, and all the writers. We got to showcase a lot of new voices, too. I think we were able to work with people who didn't necessarily have food writing backgrounds mm-hmm. Or sometimes chefs who didn't necessarily have writing, comfortable writing. Yeah. We would help them sort of tease out their stories. So I think it was a very, like, diverse, set of content that we wound up getting to make. And that was really exciting.
That's awesome. I always loved how Lucky Peach didn't treat, like, international foods like this separate category to put off in the corner. It was always just, you know, always present. It was always not even an issue, not something to, even mention.
Yeah, I think it helped that, you know, we were a very small staff, and a majority of us were Asian people. Mm-hmm. And so it was never too weird when a different kind of food came up, right? Like, it was always exciting, and we didn't think, like, oh, this is a foreign thing. It was kind of like, I think that we had a diversity in voices.
Yeah, it was very global. It didn't, it didn't strike me as, you know, treating, it was like, wasn't like about Asian food, but it was all about Asian food, just not as a weird category, I guess. So
yeah, definitely.
So do you think that there's any future for Lucky Peach right now, or what do you think is going to happen?
Oh yeah. I mean, I have no idea.
No idea.
I actually left in the fall before, the closure was announced. But it's hard to say. I know that there might be a future for it. And so I wouldn't lose all hope yet, but I'm not sure at this point.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
Never say never.
Exactly.
So you left.
It's very resilient. It could rise from the ashes.
That's right. That's right. well, for now, though, this book is a really great sort of last hurrah for the cookbook series. But you also, you left in the fall because you were working on not only this book, but a novel, a first-time novel for you. So that's very exciting. Congrats. You want to tell us what it's called, when we can get it, and...
Yeah, it's crazy timing because, you know, I've been working on that novel for something like, I think I started it in 2010. So I really started it before I began at Lucky Peach. Uh-huh. And the timing worked out in this crazy way where the egg book came out in April, uh-huh. April 4th, and my novel is about to come out July 11th.
That's super exciting.
Yeah, just within months of each other, it's a bit of an insane time. And it's funny having to go from, you know, talking about eggs and egg facts to talking about fiction.
Well, that's really a cool accomplishment. It's a multi-talented sort of brain you have there, tackling eggs, juggling eggs, if you will. With a little bit of romance, right? Goodbye Vitamin is the name of the novel, and it deals with what was it? The protagonist is just a young sort of 20-something, or do you want to give
is
a little?
30 years old,
okay.
And she essentially it's just about a year in her life. She moves home to take care of her dad, who's sick with Alzheimer's, and she is sort of at a place in her life where she's also struggling to take care of herself, mm-hmm. not quite sure what's next for her in her life. So it's about that kind of year, like almost a gap year for her, where mm-hmm. she's trying to sort things out.
And meanwhile, Alzheimer's is taking over her dad's life. That's really, that sounds like a great book that maybe a lot of people might relate to. So definitely check that out. Goodbye Vitamin. July 3rd, you said?
11th.
11th. All right. Well, okay, we don't have to talk about both on this show, though. So not to flip, scramble your brain too much, if you allow another pun.
It's great. We should squeeze in as many as possible.
All right. So what's the most excellent recipe in this book, in your opinion, now that you're an expert?
Oh, it's so hard. Kathy, it's hard to answer that question.
I know.
I mean, you probably, like, what if someone were like, what's your favorite food of Taiwan?
Yeah, I know. It's your babies. It's your egg babies.
Yeah. At different moments at, you know, different times, I have different favorites. But one of my favorites through this whole process, like a really easy and quick dish to make that was really surprising to me and that I like cooking for people because it's really stunning looking, is this Turkish dish called cilber.
Oh.
And it is poached eggs in a bed of garlicky yogurt with chili butter drizzled on top.
What?
And so it's this very, like, soft, pillowy, kind of, it's just all, you know, like a soft mush, but it's really delicious. Mm. And if you sop it up with crusty bread or something, it's really good. And it's a nice dish to have for breakfast. You can make it while half asleep, you know.
Mm. That's a new one for me.
Yeah, it's really surprising because I just never had thought about putting eggs and yogurt together, but you know, the Turkish people thought of it first, and it's really a delightful, very easy meal to make. It comes together in minutes.
Awesome. We're going to, we need to cut to a quick little break, but I want to talk about many more egg recipes that caught my mind, and maybe we can squeeze some more out of you too, right after a little break here.
Sure.
Hey, it's Kathy Irway, the host of Eat Your Words. Today I'm here with Camilla Salisbury, author of Bob's Red Mill Everyday Gluten-Free Cookbook, 281 Delicious Whole Grain Recipes. We're going to get to the bottom of this gluten-free craze. So why aren't people eating gluten, and what does gluten-free really mean?
Well, there are two main reasons why people are deciding to go gluten-free these days. And the first one is really serious. It's for people who have celiac disease, and it's a pretty serious condition. But then there is also a growing number of people with gluten intolerance or gluten sensitivity, and they're trying out gluten-free diets because they find that eating foods without gluten just makes them feel better.
Okay, got it. But what actually makes something gluten-free?
Well, what makes something gluten-free is essentially that it doesn't have any of the protein gluten in it. And a lot of people are surprised to learn that many grains do not contain gluten, when in fact just a very small number of grains do.
Does anyone offer truly gluten-free options?
Well, Bob's Red Mill really understands gluten-free options, and that means they separate their grains during the manufacturing process, and so they're testing each batch at every step of the way for purity to ensure that it's gluten-free. So when it says on the package that it's gluten-free, you can be assured that it is gluten-free.
All right, so gluten-free listeners out there craving some steel-cut oats can pick up a pack of Bob's Red Mill and rest assured you're getting the real deal. Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and all the gluten-free products that they offer at bobsredmill.com/podcast. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I just heard myself. I just put myself on a commercial break with me in the commercial. That was unexpected. Thanks, David, for not warning me about that. Okay, so we're talking more about eggs with Rachel Kong. How are you? Still here?
I'm still good. Yeah, still good. Still here.
Awesome. So, okay, you were just talking about a Turkish dish with eggs and yogurt. I wanted to bring up some interesting eggs that really caught my eye, because this is a lot of egg recipes. And I have to also say, I've always wanted a book like this because, you know, everything's just tied by one very simple, very easy ingredient, which is eggs. But they're sort of in the forefront rather than, you know, a cake, which is, you know, of course, a cake has eggs. But there are so many dishes around the world with eggs in the forefront. They're fun names, too. So there's Quek. It's just like deep-fried quail eggs that look amazing. How did you find out?
They're from the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. And they're sort of like Scotch eggs because you peel them, but instead of putting like a sausage patty, which is what they do with the Scotch eggs, and then frying them, It sort of just has a light, beautiful looking batter around it. And then there's...
Yeah, it's a very bright orange batter that's colored with annatto seeds. You can get them... We mentioned they're quail eggs, so they're they're these tiny little eggs.
Like on a stick.
They usually sell them on a stick, in the Philippines.
That's beautiful.
They're kind of street food, and you dip them in a spicy sauce.
I never would have imagined there's so many crazy preparations of eggs that are, not crazy. Is that crazy? I don't know.
Yeah. They're decadent. I tried to figure out the different patterns of egg behavior, egg cooking behavior.
Yeah.
So we have different chapters on things like the quack quack, I feel, and the Scotch egg belong to this category of egg cookery that's really decadent. Mm-hmm. We like to do things like deep fry eggs and devil them and cover them in mayonnaise. There's just something about the egg that lends itself to excess and that, really makes us want to, gild the lily, as it were.
Yeah. And then there's also the preserving eggs. So there's lots of pickled eggs here and sort of stained and dyed eggs. You have a Picopolis pickled egg, duck egg recipe.
Yeah. Yeah. So Picopolis is a man named David Barber in Portland, Oregon, who pickles, just all manner of things. He's a big pickler. And he pickled duck eggs in some leftover pickled peppers, essentially, and they were delicious. They were just
He picked a peck of pickled peppers and then pickled the duck eggs.
He also sells those duck eggs on a stick at the farmer's market. Eggs on a stick was a surprising thing for me to learn about.
Yeah, that's the me too. And you also have the salted duck eggs and the century eggs, which are traditional Chinese preparations of egg that I never even thought too much about them. Like it's just sort of like a seasoning. Sometimes it's used as like a little panache. You just add a little bit in the end, but you actually have a cool, lots of recipes for that. So there's even like a spicy basil and century egg stir fry recipe.
You should try that. It's so good.
That looks really good.
And it's really good.
So for anyone who hasn't seen century eggs, they turn a totally different appearance. The skins or the whites turn translucent black. And
there are these eggs that are basically soaked or covered in like an alkaline solution, and that causes the eggs to turn. I don't know what. What do you describe that color as? It's like kind of darkish black.
The yolk
brown.
Is like gray.
Yeah. It's crazy. They're crazy looking. And it's something that I also, coming from a Chinese family, didn't really think too much about. Like they were something that my mom would put into her congee.
Yeah.
And that is kind of weird tasting, but didn't strike me as too weird. But I remembered, while making this book, that they are pretty foreign to people who have never encountered them before. They're very alien looking.
And frightening, too. I found that a lot of people find that crazy in a bad way. But
yes. I think that
what can you do?
They haven't quite swept America yet. But maybe one day soon.
And I love how you have some recipes for things that we don't really think of as eggs being the main ingredient, but they are. So like for souffle, for example, people think of cheese or maybe chocolate, but that's really just whipped egg whites, right? You can't do it otherwise. Or tortilla espanol, which is the potato omelet known in many tapas bars as a quintessential snack. And and matzo braai too, which is a similar type of thing where it's like sort of shaped by eggs. It's bound together by eggs in matzo or potatoes in either case.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a binder.
Eggs are so central to...
And versatile.
I mean, like, yeah, and also they just turn a food into something substantial. They are, you know, like a really cheap and easy protein to use. So, like, I think that's why I make a case for them being more than just a breakfast food in this book, because, you know, like, especially in a lot of other cultures, they just scramble some eggs with, you know, say, tomato or another vegetable, and there you have dinner, like a nice side dish for dinner.
Stir fry, yeah. How do you feel about egg replacement substitute, newfangled sort of trends around that? Of course, you know, I'm not really just talking about egg beaters, but there's been newer developments like fava bean foam being used. There's this whole like sort of craze around that being used to create a mayonnaise.
Is that like the liquid?
Yeah, like fava bean protein is being used now, and then they created this fava-naise.
Also, they use, it's kind of recent, I guess, like chickpea liquid
pea
or
proteins,
any kind of legume, you can use the liquid, and they call it aquafaba.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can, it's interesting because you can use it like an egg white, and it foams
crazy,
up like a meringue.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really crazy, but you know it's different from an egg. It has a beany flavor. There's a piece in the book all about egg replacements, and you know if you're baking and you don't want to use an egg, you can use different substitutes, things like applesauce and vegan baking or flax seeds, and they all do different things that an egg can do, but none of them do all of the things that an egg does.
Right, yeah. So you can separate the egg and break it apart and try to find replacements for each thing, but you're never going to have like something that has both parts, like the white and the yolk. And
And just that perfect like suspension of it. I think, it's hard to improve on the egg. It's already a perfect package. Although I hear that they're, you know, working on that whole egg replacement.
I bet. Yeah.
But I have not really delved too deeply into that.
We'll see. I guess yet to be discovered. So how did you find all the contributors for this book? Because there's like a lot. There's how many recipes are in here total? It seems like around 100.
You know, I should know this answer, but it kept changing. I had to keep cutting recipes fit them into the book. I think we started out with over 100, and now it might be something like 86. Or 87. But the contributors, I had worked with a lot of them before through Lucky Peach magazine. And that was how I got to know a lot of them. Some of them, you know, had been my interview subjects while working at the magazine. So like Deborah Madison, I met through writing a profile on her, and Dory Greenspan, I met through also writing a piece on her. So there are some cookbook authors that I had been a fan of for a long time, and you know it was a delight to ask them to be part of the book. And then just people whose work I admired, I just reached out, you know, like Kathy Irway of The Food of Taiwan.
It's so cool, you have such a great mix. There's like Padma Lakshmi, there's
her recipe is great. She has an egg curry recipe, and it's funny because she says it's such a simple recipe, but it has like over 20 ingredients.
<saw that. laughs> But she was like, that's what my mom would make in the morning when she was bored. Lazy. There's like Jacques
Pepin.
It
just like really shows her work ethic, I guess.
Right, yeah. It's true. No, it's an amazing list of folks you have contributing, so it's really exciting. There's all over the world, right? So there's Jacques Pepin, you got, you know, Chef Mike Anthony, I can't even, Harold McGee.
Adam Goldner wrote a great piece about Kinamu eggs, which are these like shiny, weird eggs.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I love all the little essays throughout it. So there's not just recipes, there's just like these little history tidbits. So the Fabergé egg story was really interesting. About how somebody found one of the lost Fabergé eggs from the Russian Tsar and was able to confirm its identity or authenticity and made who knows what, a killing on it just by coming across this artifact that was so gilded and missing in the world. Eggs in all sort of which ways are explored in this book. It must have been, did you have fun doing this?
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty hard making a book, as you know, but, it was fun to work on it as a team. I had a great team of people at Lucky Peach, and also just getting to work with the contributors was a real dream. So
nice.
Yeah, in the end, I'm really, look back on the experience fondly.
Mm-hmm. I just love the variety in this book. I think it's a killer book. And I'm curious, what's next for you now that you have two books coming out at, like, within 2 months of each other? Double whammy.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I'm actually, as you were calling me, I was working on a piece about oysters. So I'm doing a little bit of freelancing. I'm also working on my next novel.
Great.
So, yeah, I'm just doing a lot of writing.
Awesome.
And a lot of cooking. Oh, I also have, I should actually plug this, a book coming out next year with short stack editions.
Oh, awesome. Yeah,
that's about,
love that.
Cabbage.
That's,
yes.
That's great. Awesome. So we'll look out for that one. I love that series. I can't believe they didn't do a cabbage one yet. That's really cool.
I know. I was really excited when I realized that they hadn't done one. They've done a kale book, but not a cabbage book. And I kind of think, I mean, I like cabbage a lot more than I like kale. They're both up there, but.
That should be fun. I definitely want to check that one out. All right. Well, I guess that's about all the time we have for today. But thank you so much, Rachel, for being our guest today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Yeah. It's great to be back here. So we'll see you next week also on Eat Your Words.
I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
And thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.